Okay, thank you for all returning so promptly. This is the second session, which will be as meaty as the first. The first speaker is Stephen Starr, Associate of the Nuclear Age Peace Foundation, former board member and senior scientist for Physicians for Social Responsibility. He's going to talk about nuclear war, an unrecognized mass extinction event waiting to happen. Stephen.
Thank you, Helen. In 1945, Albert Einstein said, "The release of atomic power has changed everything except our way of thinking." In 2015, 70 years later, we're still stockpiling nuclear weapons in preparation for nuclear war. Continued willingness to allow huge nuclear arsenals to exist clearly shows that we have not fundamentally grasped the most important truth of the nuclear age, that a nuclear war is not likely to be survived by the human species. A war fought with 21st century nuclear weapons would be more than just a great catastrophe in human history. If we allow it to happen, such a war would be a mass extinction event that ends human history. There's a profound difference between extinction and an unprecedented disaster or even the end of civilization. Because even after such an immense catastrophe, human life would go on. But extinction, by definition, is an event of utter finality. And a nuclear war that could cause human extinction should really be considered as the ultimate criminal act. It would certainly be the crime to end all crimes. Let's see. The world's leading climatologists now tell us that nuclear war threatens our continued existence as a species. Their studies predict that a large nuclear war, especially one fought with strategic nuclear weapons, would create a post-war environment in which, for many years, it would be too cold and dark to even grow food. Their findings make it clear that not only humans, but most large animals and many other forms of complex life would likely vanish forever in a nuclear darkness of our own making. The environmental consequences of nuclear war would attack the ecological support systems of life at every level. Radioactive fallout, produced not only by nuclear bombs, but also by the destruction of nuclear power plants and their spent fuel pools, would poison the biosphere. Millions of tons of smoke would act to destroy Earth's protective ozone layer and block most sunlight from reaching Earth's surface. This would create ice age weather conditions that would last for decades. If the political and military leaders who control nuclear weapons strictly avoid any direct public discussion of the consequences of nuclear war, they do so by arguing that nuclear weapons are not intended to be used but only to deter. Remarkably, the leaders of the nuclear weapon states have chosen to ignore the authoritative, long-standing scientific research done by the climatologists, research that predicts virtually any nuclear war, but with even a fraction of the operational and deployed nuclear arsenals, would leave the Earth essentially uninhabitable. Some of the more recent of these scientific studies appeared in print almost 9 years ago, yet their predictions have not been publicly acknowledged or discussed by any American or Russian president, or by any of their top military leaders. In fact, none of the current leaders of any of the nations that possess nuclear weapons have ever made such a public acknowledgement. It's not clear that these leaders are even aware of the findings of this research, since they have consistently refused to meet with the scientists who did the studies. No nuclear weapon state has ever attempted to evaluate what consequences the detonation of their nuclear arsenals would have upon the global biosphere and ecosystems. As a result, grave threat to continued human existence posed by existing arsenals of nuclear weapons is a subject not included in the global debate on nuclear weapons. The existential danger of nuclear war has not been mentioned during American presidential campaigns or debates for more than 40 years. Such considerations have never been included in any military planning or as part of any national strategic review of U.S. military force requirements. Why is this? According to our best scientists, the deployed arsenals of nuclear weapons pose a clear and present danger to the survival of our species. How is it that our leaders are unable or unwilling to even talk about this grave danger? In the 1980s, the American public was generally aware of the existential threat posed by nuclear war. That awareness no longer exists today. This is in part because U.S. public schools do not teach students about nuclear weapons. A couple of generations of Americans have grown up with essentially no knowledge of the effects or consequences of nuclear war. This may be why our political and military leaders continue to focus upon the numbers of nuclear weapons rather than the consequences of their use. This makes no sense when a single ballistic missile can now carry almost 3 times more nuclear explosive power than all the bombs that were detonated during World War II. A universal ignorance of basic nuclear facts ultimately creates a very dangerous situation, because leaders who are unaware that nuclear war can end human history are likely to lack the gut fear of nuclear war that's needed to prevent them from leading us into a nuclear holocaust. Now, I teach a class on nuclear weapons at the University of Missouri, and I get smart students, but virtually none of them that come into my class know anything about nuclear weapons. They don't know the difference between an atomic bomb and a strategic nuclear weapon. They don't know that large arsenals of strategic nuclear weapons even exist. And without this basic knowledge, it's almost impossible for anyone to understand the immense dangers posed by nuclear war. So thus, I'm going to now take a little time to explain these facts to try to ensure that my message today is clear. Atomic bombs were the first nuclear weapons to be invented. It was an atomic bomb that destroyed the Japanese city of Hiroshima at the end of World War II. A typical atomic bomb has an explosive power of about 15,000 tons of TNT, also called 15 kilotons. Atomic bombs are much less powerful than thermonuclear weapons, which were invented in the 1950s. These super bombs often had explosive powers 1,000 times greater than atomic bombs. The photo compares the relative size of the mushroom cloud produced by an atomic bomb to a mushroom cloud produced by a thermonuclear weapon that had an explosive power of 15 million tons of TNT. This was tested by the United States in 1954. Today, thermonuclear bombs are called strategic nuclear weapons. And they generally have an explosive power ranging from 100,000 tons to more than 1 million tons of TNT. Of course, while an atomic bomb is much less powerful than a strategic bomb, it will still completely destroy any city. This graphic illustrates the detonation of an atomic bomb above Midtown Manhattan, where we are now, in the heart of New York City. Solar temperatures of the bomb would almost instantly ignite a nuclear firestorm covering 3 to 5 square miles. It was an atomic bomb of this size, close to this size at least, that destroyed the city of Hiroshima in 1945. Shocking to see what the atomic bomb did to Hiroshima. More than 4 square miles of the city were utterly destroyed, transforming it into a barren wasteland. However, the firestorm produced by a strategic nuclear weapon is vastly larger than that produced by an atomic bomb. This graphic illustrates the most likely size of a fire zone created by an 800 kiloton strategic nuclear warhead. This graphic shows it being detonated above where we are now in New York. On an average day, the detonation of the warhead would instantly ignite fires over a total area of approximately 90 to 152 square miles. 20 to 30 minutes after the detonation, these fires would have joined together to form a single immense firestorm. Air temperatures in the fire zone would be above the boiling point of water. Hurricane force winds would blow towards the center of the firestorm, driving the flames horizontally, causing everything remotely flammable to burn. There would be no survivors in the fire zone. Remember, the 800 kilotons equals 800,000 tons of TNT. Russia has 1,000 strategic nuclear warheads that it can launch with less than 15 minutes warning, and 700 of these have an explosive power of 800 kilotons. In a war with the U.S., it would require about 30 minutes for these warheads to hit U.S. cities. To imagine a nuclear war in which hundreds or thousands of such firestorms were ignited in a course of less than 1 hour. There would be hundreds of cities and hundreds of thousands of square miles all burning at the same time. It would probably be one of the first consequences of a U.S.-Russian nuclear war. This is because 93% of the nuclear weapons are owned by the U.S. and Russia. Russia has about 8,000 intact nuclear weapons. The U.S. has about 7,300. France comes next with 300 nuclear weapons, and all the other nuclear weapon states have fewer than that. The U.S. and Russia together maintain a total of more than 800 launch-ready ballistic missiles, which can be fired with less than 15 minutes warning and will strike their targets in 30 minutes or less. Once they're launched, they cannot be recalled from flight. These missiles are armed with a total of about 2,400 strategic nuclear warheads, which have a combined explosive power of approximately 808 million tons of TNT. It's a lot of TNT to visualize, so we need something to compare it to. The small red dot on the left side of this figure represents 2.7 million tons of TNT, which is estimated to be The total explosive power of all the bombs exploded by all the armies of the world during the 5 years of World War II. A large red circle represents 808 million tons of TNT, which is 300 times greater than the explosive power of the bombs exploded in World War II. It required less than 1 hour for these launch-ready weapons to detonate over their targets. In order to make sure that the U.S. and Russian presidents can give the order to launch their missiles in less than 1 minute, both presidents are constantly accompanied by a military officer carrying a nuclear briefcase. Briefcase contains something similar to a laptop computer, which is designed to transmit the president's order to launch a nuclear strike. The strike goes to the military command, the order goes to the military command centers where the actual launch would be carried out. Another catastrophic consequence of nuclear war is likely to result from the targeting or destruction of nuclear power plants. There are more than 400 commercial nuclear power plants in the world. 100 of them are in the United States, and about 285 are located in Europe and Eurasia. They hold some of the largest concentrations of radioactivity on the planet. And the largest portion of it resides in the used or spent fuel rods. They're stored in spent fuel pools next to the reactors. The rods in the fuel pool contain 5 to 7 times more radioactivity than is inside the nuclear reactor. However, these pools are all located outside the large concrete containment vessels that house reactors. This means any catastrophic release of radioactivity from the pools will not be contained, but will be released in the atmosphere and the environment. Spent fuel rods continue to produce huge amounts of heat even after they're removed from the reactor core. Thus, spent fuel pools must constantly operate large cooling systems to remove this heat. Otherwise, the water in the pool will eventually overheat and boil off. This must be prevented at all costs because if the spent fuel rods are exposed to steam or air, they will rupture or ignite and release huge quantities of radioactivity. Even if spent fuel pools are not directly targeted in a nuclear war or during wartime, it would probably still be destroyed by the long-term loss of off-site electrical power, which is required to run their cooling systems. In other words, the destruction of the electrical grid in a nuclear war would almost inevitably lead to the failure of the spent fuel cooling systems and the subsequent destruction of the spent fuel they contain. Ruptured or burning fuel rods would release huge amounts of radioactivity, including a radioactive isotope called cesium-137. We unfortunately have had experience with what happens when cesium-137 is released by a catastrophic nuclear accident. The destruction of the Chernobyl reactor, which contained about 3% of the cesium-137 found in most spent fuel pools, created an uninhabitable radioactive exclusion zone, which covers more than 1,100 square miles. If you look at this map of the Chernobyl exclusion zone, it specifies in the key that it's greater than 40 curies per square kilometer is required to make an area uninhabitable. Well, I was studying this some years ago, and I remembered that cesium-137 has 88 curies per gram. So this means that less than half a gram of cesium-137 was made into smoke and spread over a square kilometer. It means you can't live there for centuries. That translates into about 1.2 grams per square mile. American dime weighs 2.7 grams. So you can take half the weight of a dime in cesium-137 and spread it over Central Park. Nobody can live there again for centuries. So many spent fuel pools each contain more than 1 million grams of cesium-137. Then there's spent fuel rods. And a nuclear war would destroy hundreds of these fuel pools. So this incredible destruction would lead to what scientists describe as a mass extinction event. There's considerable evidence, which appears in the fossil records. There have been five mass extinction events in geologic history. In these events, at least 50% of all animal species were wiped out. Afterwards, it took millions of years for animal life to recover to its previous level of abundance. The most recent of these mass extinction events took place 66 million years ago, when an asteroid about 6 miles in diameter struck the Earth near the Yucatan Peninsula. Its impact vaporized the Earth's crust, and it formed a 112-mile-wide crater in the Gulf of Mexico, and the superheated material that vaporized in the crater was blasted far above the Earth's atmosphere, then rained down upon the entire planet. The debris from the asteroid heated Earth's upper atmosphere to about 2,700 degrees Fahrenheit. That's hot enough to melt steel. For a number of hours, the temperature in the lower atmosphere reached about 700 degrees Fahrenheit, and the dinosaurs were broiled alive. At the same time, all the forests in the world caught fire and burned. Smoke from the burning forest rose above cloud level and into the atmosphere, and into the stratosphere, where it surrounded and engulfed the Earth. Smoke formed a global stratospheric smoke layer, which remained in place for many years. I've read that if you would have been there, you could have held your hand in front of your face and you wouldn't have seen it. Because the smoke layer almost completely blocked the warming sunlight, it created ice age weather conditions on Earth. And this period of cold and dark that followed has come to be known as impact winter. The impact winter devastated life on Earth. No land animal larger than a squirrel is believed to have survived the fire and ice from the asteroid. 75% of all the living species of plants and animals that had inhabited Earth became extinct. Well, it was more than 30 years ago when scientists began warning that a nuclear war would also create a global stratospheric smoke layer, which would cause a nuclear winter similar to impact winter. New studies show that the original 1980s research actually underestimated the consequences of nuclear war. Nuclear winter resembled impact winter in many basic ways. In a nuclear war, hundreds of thousands of nuclear detonations would ignite immense nuclear firestorms. And these would produce as much as 150 or 180 million tons of smoke. This smoke would rise above cloud level and encircle the Earth. Because the smoke could not be rained out, it would remain in the stratosphere for decades. There would lead to the destruction of most of Earth's protective ozone layer, while it would also block warming sunlight from reaching the surface of the Earth. The loss of the protective ozone layer would vastly increase the amount of harmful ultraviolet light reaching Earth. The loss of warming sunlight would create weather conditions colder than those experienced at the height of the last ice age. Temperatures would fall below freezing every day for 1 to 3 years in the continental interiors of North America and Eurasia. Growing seasons would be eliminated for at least a decade or longer. Nothing would grow, including the food crops that we depend upon. Most humans and animals would starve to death. The animated graphic here was produced by Dr. Luke Allman of NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center, and it illustrates 150 million tons of smoke entering the stratosphere after a war fought with the strategic nuclear arsenals of the US and Russia. In less than 2 weeks, the smoke surrounds the Earth. In a few more weeks, smoke acts to block 70% of all sunlight reaching the surface of the Northern Hemisphere. The illustration of a farmer standing in his ruined cornfield gives you some idea of how dark a cloudless sky in North America would appear following a war fought with strategic nuclear weapons. On a cloudy day at noon, the light levels would be similar to what you would experience now at midnight during a full moon. This image was adapted from an article published in 2009 by Scientific American, written by Drs. Toon and Robach, a few years after they had published their peer-reviewed studies that warned of the existential dangers of nuclear war. In 2011, Dr. Robach wrote in Nature magazine that he had made multiple requests to meet with officials of the Obama administration so that he and Dr. Toon could discuss the findings of their studies. All of his requests were denied. I could provide a lot more information and examples of leaders refusing to meet with scientists who only wish to warn them about the grave dangers posed by nuclear war. But further proof is unnecessary, simply because of the fact that none of the leaders of the nuclear weapon states have publicly acknowledged that a war fought with their nuclear arsenals could end human history. It's time for them to do so. It's time for us to demand that they do so. I began this talk with a quote by Albert Einstein. I'd like to close with another that we should all remember. Einstein said, "The world is a dangerous place to live, not because of the people who are evil, but because of the people who don't do anything about it." Don't be one of them. Please do whatever you can to help prevent nuclear war. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephen. He's got a cold. That's why his voice sounded a bit funny. So he came and gave his speech. And he's just had a paper published in the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientist about an 800 kiloton bomb dropping on New York. I would advise you all to read that.